Thank you, Bob. So let's start call things to order. And Haley, I know you're out there. Oh, we're not doing Pledge of Allegiance today. I thought, and we've been alternating off and on considering whatever is happening in the world. And I thought with the fires that are going on, not just here in California, but up in Oregon and Washington, we've had recent flooding and hurricanes. In Texas and on the East Coast. And I thought this would be kind of, let's say, allow us to embrace what it is that we're gifted with here in the United States of America and be grateful for what it is. And what's happening right now is obviously happening for a reason, but we're not going to question or try to answer what that is now. So if all of you are able to look on your screen, and see the first stanza from the song, Woody Guthrie, This Land Is Your Land, and you can repeat it with me, or we'll just, I'll just read it myself. So here we are. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood
to the Gulf Stream This land
for you and me. Thank you, Haley. And all right, moving forward, we have a quorum and a few more folks after that. Do we have any agenda reviews or additions or deletions? Anyone have anything? Seeing none, let's move on to item two and the PROS chairman's report. And I think Steve is in the building. Mr. Niffin, it's all yours, buddy.
Hi, welcome, and thank you for having me. A couple of things right off the bat. Are you familiar with the new Cambria Online? I think Harry is a newspaper, and they would like the PROS to write an article every month. And so I did it a couple of months and I was going to get Stan Cooper to do it, but we kind of wanted permission from the board just so that you guys are comfortable with that unfettered article going on. Does that make sense? Meaning this, we don't have to write an article. We can just send the minutes to the guy and he could write the article. But the problem with that is that we have to send the minutes the following month. And this guy kind of wants this article to be current of what's going on after every meeting. So John and even Jim Beringer or some of our other members were, we just wanted to ask permission for that. That was one thing. And John and Tim can, I guess, explain the ramifications of that. That was one thing. The other item that we had on the agenda was us spending the $20,000 to design the bathrooms. And there was some issue about whether or not we could do it on our own or whether that needed to go out to bid and how we actually contracted with Civil Design over there with Monty Soto at down the road there on Main Street. That was the second thing. And then the third thing was our priorities, which I emailed to Haley and she now has. And we can go over that if you wanted to have a discussion on that, or if the meeting was going to be longer than you wanted this particular meeting to be, we could discuss all the ramifications of that at our PROS meeting or at a later date. With that being said, I would take questions.
Well, does anybody have any questions for or suggestions? I don't necessarily know with regard to the Cambria CA website how the PROS Commission should approach writing an article about their meeting. I mean, I have a feeling about it, a sense about it. Does anybody on the board or someone out there in Director Rice, you have your hand up? Go right ahead.
So first, thank you for writing articles for a new news outlet. I appreciate that. I think I would like to hear from Tim and the GM about potential ramifications, because if a board member were to write a regular recurring article, I don't know if that then potentially brings up possible Brown Act issues or not. I definitely think that we need to get information out there, though, so I'm very glad that you've taken the initiative. And I don't personally have any objection, especially if there's some kind of, if it's not just a report on the meeting, but rather what's coming up so people can attend the meeting, that might be a more important thing, but that's just me. On the bathroom design, I think that the PROS doesn't have the authority to sign contracts, but they did recommend, and I think the board already budgeted for that $20,000. So I'm not sure what our process is when there's a project that is going kind of through staff by way of PROS. I missed what the third issue was. I'm sorry, Steve.
Skate park.
Ah, skate park. Yeah. I'm 100% behind it. I don't know what the next steps need to be, though. That's my comment.
Okay, Steve, I don't see any other. Director Pearson is raising his hand. Go ahead, David.
On the Cambria CA article, I think you should go right ahead and do those as long as Mr. Carmel says it's okay. On the contract, the $20,000, I think, is within the GM's purview, and he can go ahead and help you get that contract done. As long as the proper bidding process was done as a consultant, I think it's not really a bid, it's an RFP process. So he just needs to make sure he goes through that. The last one, I think now that we have your list, I think we ought to put it on the agenda so that it's a regular item that we can actually discuss and that we can get public comment on before moving on with it. Since it's a little bit later because of your meeting being just recently, I think getting it on the agenda for us to have a discussion on it makes the most sense. Thank you.
Consider it done.
Thank you, Bob. Director Howell, go right ahead.
Thank you. as to the Cambria CA article, I don't have any problem with that either, as long as the whoever is writing the article is speaking for the PROS Commission, and that we don't have individual PROS commissioners regaling, you know, as long. So it's really, I think it's up to the PROS Commission to discipline their own people in terms of that. But I think it's an excellent idea. And so with that, whatever constraints Mr. Carmel might offer, but other than that, I'd say, yes, please do that. It's very good. The $20,000, I think, if it's in the budget, I don't see an issue there, and the general manager can certainly handle that. The skate park, I agree with, although I am personally for it, I really think it needs to be an agenda item for the board so that the entire board can weigh in and the public can also weigh in. So that's the short of that. Thanks.
Vice President Steidel, you should speak as well.
Yes, please. I agree with both Director Pearson and Director Howell relative to the bathroom design and Cambria CA. And the skate park to be an agenda item. But I just wanted to ask Mr. Niffen, just to confirm, so that the two priorities that the PROS Commission has come back with are the bathrooms and the skate park. Is that correct?
I'm going to say yes to that, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Steve, I just want to remark that with regard to Cambria CA, obviously, I don't think the minutes would be an adequate way to just put some information out there for the public to observe and digest. Probably just writing it as you might write a newspaper article or something like that. Allow for a little bit of creativity with regard to whatever member of the commission writes it, and I think that'll be more than sufficient. That's just my take on it. And I know you've had plenty of comment, by the way, public comment and pros with regard to folks mainly supporting the skate park. So we just appreciate that taking place at the board meeting as well.
Awesome. Hey, I think the agenda item is a great way to start. That way we can stay on top of things. And if we need decisions, it'll already be there kind of even on a monthly basis, or I don't know how that goes on. And then in regard to the priority of the bathroom in the skate park, you know, the pros priority has always been the bathroom, and now, you know, and now the skate park. And so I'm a wishy-washy guy. I'm kind of, you know, we're kind of leaning towards the skate park because that's something now. And the bathroom is this long journey that we've been on. So that'll be a fun discussion. And then in regards to the article, we appreciate the freedom to write the article. We would hope to write it in the same fashion that President Farmer kind of writes his too. But I also appreciate Mr. Weingold's bringing it to our attention that, hey, you know, we are under the auspices, or we serve under your guys's, you know, jurisdiction. So we just wanted to be careful with that. But sometimes the literary people want to have, you know, a little free rein to, you know, be creative. So that's what we were looking for. And we appreciate it. Thank you guys very much.
Absolutely. We still have a couple more comments from some directors. Director Rice, go right ahead.
I just wanted to compliment you. This is precisely what I've been hoping for from the PROS report. We got a report. You could get input from the board and move forward with a confidence with what you're working on. So thank you very much, Steve.
Thank you.
Vice President Seidel, you had one more comment to make?
I was just curious as to whether the PROS commission had the ability or any recommendations in terms of being able to establish the costs associated with either of the two priorities that have come forward, because frankly, the cost is going to be what's going to determine what we can act on most quickly.
So the bathroom's going to be, let's say, $325, and the skate park to do it right, like they're talking about, is between $300 and $800.
$300 and $800 what?
$1,000.
It sounds like they're going to be doing a lot of fundraising for the skate park.
So, but that's a realistic number to look at. I would also think that there would be an option that would be less than that would get us started.
Well, President Farmer.
Go right ahead, Cindy.
I can understand how there might be a phased approach to something, but instead of a 300 to 800K range, my suggestion would be to determine what those phases are and how we can address specifically the amount of money that would put a skate park, not landscaping, not murals, not any of the associated actions, but what will it take to put a skate park on the ground for the kids? Because that's what's touted as the value of the skate park, is to have it available for the kids. So that's where the focus should be initially. And then anything in other phases, they're incremental to that. And the additional costs for those can be handled in that way. My suggestion is to throw out $300,000 to $800,000 is probably not going to engender a lot of support.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, he did say 325 for the bathroom, so that, and that's all the permitting and everything. So maybe the 300 to 800 does include the permitting, yes?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That would be a realistic number. When I started with the bathrooms, I'm like, oh, we'll be able to build a couple of bathrooms for $150,000. Right? How much can a couple of bathrooms be? Holy cow, it's two toilets and some plumbing. It's $325,000. I wish I could sit here and tell you that it's not, but we've grinded away at that over the last year and a half. We've looked at the old plans. We've looked at handicap stuff. We've looked at, you know, pit toilets. We can literally build pit toilets if we want to, but to build something that Cambria is going to be proud of, 325. The choice is yours. I don't mind a pit toilet.
Oh, that, and the only thing that I'm suggesting is helping us be able to represent it to the community.
Yes, I agree.
As a cost to bear, we need to understand what it contains. I didn't know that, for instance, the bathrooms, the 325, was inclusive of this, this, and this. And we don't have any tangible data to work with. And I guess what I'm asking is we need some tangible data, some information to understand what the components of cost are that represent that 325.
On the bathrooms, correct? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, yes.
Let's say the bathrooms. And that's why we're hoping the $20,000 will help us get that in writing from civil design. Because, you know, we as five individuals of the board really aren't capable of producing that data to you. Right. That's right. So that's where the 20 grand. And that's why we're hoping to go down that road. And that's why I'm like, yeah, 325. And we've got the specifics on that. So I believe that we can get you that data. On the skate park, we're still in the initial phases. So they're just, you know, and that 300 number comes from our group. That doesn't come from the skate park group. I can hear the skate park group screaming right now, we don't need 300 grand, we can do it for 100. And I'm sure they can. But the reality of it is that 300 is probably a number that we as the grown-ups and the leaders in the community should probably say, that's really the number we're going to have to do, because we're going to have to do a handicap parking. And God only knows if they make us do a bathroom over there, whatever else that's going to come along. That's okay. You know, the question is, what is our responsibility as the leaders and the grown-ups for the kids? There you go.
Okay.
I'm sorry to have this. Sean? I love this discussion. Oh, no. I hate it on Zoom. I wish we were in a room together to have it. You know, it feels awkward.
I agree. And my questions for you weren't a matter of challenging the value of anything that was being said. It was just that I was trying to gather data in my head.
Oh, yeah. No, Cindy, I love your questions. No offense taken.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. Not at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to make a comment, if nobody minds, about the bathroom. One of the alternatives to a usual flush toilet that is, being incorporated in other parts of the planet are solar-powered waterless toilets. And I know a lot of folks, I think us older folks, might be a little bit turned off by something like that, whereas maybe younger people that are maybe slightly more aware of the changes that are taking place on this planet might feel like, let's investigate that alternative. Maybe this, since most people wouldn't want to do this at their home, maybe this might be a good opportunity to expose the populace to what a solar-powered waterless toilet is about, how efficient it would be, how it works, the fact that it wouldn't use water. It'd probably be a lot less expensive. I don't think we have anything to lose. I don't think it was going to cost that much, and I think it's worth investigating. And so I don't know if Kermit wants to look into that, but that's just a suggestion. And being president of the board, I feel like I can't order you to do that. No, not at all. But I think it's, you know, we're in a new decade of this century. And as we can see, there's no way we can predict what's on the horizon. I think endeavoring to incorporate new ideas that are outside of the box to do whatever we normally do, no pun on the do, by the way. So I would suggest investigating something like that. I see one smile and the other one's kind of people, are you serious, Harry? Well, I am. So kind of have Kermit check into that if you don't mind.
We'll take that into account.
Thank you. All right, Vice President Seidel, you have one more comment?
Yes, please. And it was something that I had thought of wanting to mention before. Something for consideration when the costs are being looked at, Steve, and considered,
mm-hmm.
is who's going to be responsible for the maintenance costs and what are the estimated maintenance costs?
Yes, meaning do we need a parks department?
Well, that's taking it a step further. That wasn't necessary.
Well, that because seriously, the board, I mean, we all kind of know it. We're at that point now. Once we get another restroom or the skate park, we are going to put that pressure on Carlos and his guys. And we're really starting to expand. We've pretty much all accepted if we build a playing field, we're going to have a parks department before we build the field because someone's going to got to take care of the field. So we're getting close to that, and people are like, "Ah, I can hear," but that will be on the horizon. I've consumed too much of this meeting.
No, not at all. It's great information. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was valuable, Steve. So thank you so much, and thanks for being here. And go Dodgers, right?
Go Dodgers.
Okay. So let's move on to public comment. Haley, I don't see any hands up here. Do you have any written public comment?
I do. I have one written public comment to read from Mel McCulloch, and then I have a handful of people that would like to speak.
Yeah, I saw that. No pun intended. But yeah, four hands immediately went up. So go ahead and read the one from Mr. McCulloch first.
Okay. Honorable Board and Management, I am speaking for the majority of our 260 chamber members and those on the affordable housing wait list. There has been an ad hoc committee working on changes to the CCSD regulations on affordable housing for over 9 months. We deserve an updated report, and when will the changes be completed and voted on by the board? We have been delayed long enough by this work. Thank you, Mel McCulloch, representative for Dr. Pilch. And the next member of the public that wishes to speak doesn't have his hand raised, but did send me an email is Jim Berenger. Jim, go ahead and unmute yourself.
I'm unmuted. I like Harry's idea better. Supporting Mel McCulloch's need to proceed with housing. The Green Street project was rejected in August of 2019. That's over a year ago. In reviewing the video of August 19th, I saw that there was a bit of confusion as to what was asked for. One was an extension of a decade-old will serve letter, or was it the next agenda item as a low-income project, also rejected due to some confusion? That particular project was fully compliant with county standards and the existing CCSD code. No workforce housing was in that plan. An ad hoc was created nonetheless. In reviewing the ad hoc interim report, I saw no additional processes that conflict with the CCSD's code as was being proposed. The low-income project on Green Street met all the then current CCSD codes to qualify for an allocation. Nonetheless, please schedule the Green Street multifamily low-income project application for an intent to serve so that they can proceed to help alleviate our critical housing shortage. By the way, before the election, so that voters understand what the CCSD board's responsibilities are and what the county planning responsibilities are regarding land use. In fact, we could invite Steve McMasters or someone from county planning to describe what his views are of how the roles of the county and the CCSD can work together in conjunction with affordable housing. Even ADUs, now that's a hot topic. district council could advise ahead of the board before the board packet is presented as well. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Next person to speak, Haley.
Next person is Julie. Julie, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thanks so much, guys. Can you hear me?
Okay, well, I'll do what I can. My difficulty is that for some reason the microphone isn't working in my computer anymore. So I attend visually on the computer and then through my phone. So I'll do.
I'm hearing something there.
A suggestion. So, A suggestion. Yep. I think that perhaps the papers that you're working with either may be going across your phone or maybe near to it. And I think that may be what a lot of the background noise is that might be being heard.
Well, that's possible. But since I have a mute button on my phone, I'll just go ahead and utilize that. Okay. Hopefully that will resolve some of the problem. So, Haley, you said Julie wished to speak, so go right ahead.
All right, thank you so much. I hope everybody can hear me okay. Yes? Perfect. Thank you so much. I want to say first off, Steve, very much appreciated in regards to PROSE. I think we've had tremendous support and made great progress in regards with our last meeting and providing them information. To Vice President Seidel, I just want to say, please know we are moving as quickly as we can to get as organized with this as possible. These questions are valid questions and ones we will get answers for. We've just been in these stages of, I just want to say evolving, but it is ever evolving. Each week it just gets a little bit more organized. And when I say organized, I mean both community support, the kids themselves, our ability to put in our own personal time to make the project happen. And quite frankly, we were at a point where we wanted to make sure that both with CCSD and PROSE, we were crossing the right bridges to make sure those relationships were cohesive and that we understood what our next steps were. So obviously with PROSE, we're at a point where they're making this a priority on their agenda that's coming to you. And we'd love to be on your permanent agenda because that means we're being included. And both Shara and myself are here to continue to answer questions and concerns. I will say to that number and Steve, the pickleball court, although privately funded, and I happen to know Rich Davala, he's my neighbor, I know him well, that was $225,000, you guys. So, I mean, when you think about concrete and fencing, which is essentially a skate park, the number adds up. And then you start pulling in permitting and bathrooms and ADA. And so, you know, I saw a couple of board members like gasp at that number. And in retrospect, it's not a big number. It's certainly not a number we're afraid of. And we're happy to come to the table with private funding and work towards that. But we also want a relationship of partnership to understand what CCSD's responsibility is and meeting us somewhere in the middle. So I'm gonna, in two things. One, love to be on the agenda and we'll be part of these calls. Two, what is meeting in the middle? In other words, what do we need to do with CCSD, with grants or otherwise, in order for us to be working in the right direction of this project? I hope I'm making sense as to where I'm headed with this. And by the way, we'll be out there every Friday. Every Friday, we're out there, 2 to 3, peacefully, getting more organized and getting more kids. One other thing, I'm sorry, President Farmer, to Vice President Seidel also, in regards to the project, yes, there is a larger vision. I do respect it needs to go in stages. We do want this to be more than a skate park because we want the community to be proud of this space and have it be a place that I've heard plenty of comments where it's like, well, it's just for the kids. Well, yeah, it is. But we also want it to be a community place where the generations can come together, or there'll be a place they might be able to sit and watch them skate, or, you know, be able to bring in the art part of the community. And you mentioned the landscape component. Beautify Cambria has been a wonderful partner in, you know, talking progressively about what that might look like in the future and their involvement.
All right, Julie, thank you so much. Haley, and I'm going to go ahead and mute my microphone since there seemed to be a problem, and I'll let you introduce the next three speakers on public comment, okay?
Sounds good. The next member of the public that wishes to speak is Elizabeth Benhausen. Elizabeth, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you very much. Mr. President, I'm glad that you're all able to meet today in this very unusual situation, although becoming rather more common. The word apocalyptic has been used across the newscasts as they interview people on what's happening in the western part of the United States to the west of the Rockies. And I think that listening to some of your voices, I can tell that the air is not wholly wholesome for all of you today either. I'm sure the marine layer is helping the pines, et cetera, but it is all and helping reduce the fire. But we are in a moment when we have to face the harsh reality, as someone said on the radio this morning, that we are indeed in the midst of the climate crisis. And I'm bringing it up again. One reason I'm bringing it up is because the carbon dioxide number keeps rising, no matter the stay-at-homes around planet Earth. It's getting worse and worse. Now, I bring this up to you today because I just sent you an email this morning reminding you that I had sent you an email on the 17th of January regarding your meeting the day before and your interesting discussion of EDUs, equivalent dwelling unit water allocation, and intent to serve letters, among other topics. I hope to see on a very soon agenda, since I've not heard anything in response to my letter back in January, it's now September, I hope to see on an agenda very soon your serious deliberations about how this district responsibly looks at water demand, need, and usage, three different categories, in relationship to water production, before you make any further decision about the transformation of the emergency water plant into a plant that operates without emergencies to be the context. I think there are very serious policy questions confronting you now, not because you're you, but because you operate on planet Earth with a situation on the west coast of this continent right now that is not a foretaste of the future. The situation we're in right now is happening now. It is the climate crisis currently underway, and it is really posing you, I thank you for your public service, it's posing you a monumental challenge. And that is, you have to address the fact that human interests cannot all be served at the same time that we manipulate Earth resources as if they were infinite. We no longer dominate the Earth as if the Earth can serve us, but we are facing the harsh reality that we are being dominated by Earth. And what we're doing to it means we are in suffering, especially people who are persons of color in this country in terms of environmental consequences. And that includes many people in Cambria and San Simeon. I thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward to your future agenda, but not in the distant future, to take up this issue. Thank you.
I just want to interject. Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Very much appreciated. Go ahead, Haley.
The next member of the public that wishes to speak is Sarah and Cyrus Tatham.
Can you hear me? Hello, can you hear me? Okay, my name is Cyrus Tatham. I'm 15 years old. I'm here with my mom and my friend to represent the skate park here in town, and I just want to back up Julie saying that the Steve's estimation of how much the skate park and everything else that's coming in the skate coming with the skate park is going to cost more than we had thought is going to cost, and I just want to show my support for the skating community and this community, and I just want to be here to show you guys why we need this. Thank you.
The next member of the public that wishes to speak is Cheryl. Cheryl, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hello there, board. I have a question, a follow-up on the vacant property on Van Gordon Creek Road. What is the status, and if any decisions have been made, what to do with that property? Thank you very much.
The next member of the public that wishes to speak is Tina Dickinson. Tina, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you, Haley. Good afternoon, President Farmer and Board. I am so deeply troubled with the actions that have been taken by previous boards, the current board, and the situation we find ourselves in now and in previous years with fires raging throughout California. This is not the time to be considering the growth of 660 to 700 parcels of land. We are one of the most vulnerable areas, as is the Creek Fire, the forested areas are the most vulnerable. I was reading from the Fresno Bee where a CAL FIRE spokesman said that the bark beetle trees that have been affected by bark beetle are downed or are dead, are causing so much trouble for the firemen to get into these areas. That's what we have. And yet what you want to do, instead of getting a reservoir to fight fires, you want to grow this town. Two of you who are candidates running, it's the most insane, ridiculous thing I can imagine. Get your senses together and do what's right for this town, for goodness sake, because we could be the next paradise. I said it in my comments to Coastal Commission. I'll say it again. And if you don't get it from the air that we're breathing and from the ashes that have fallen all over our community when we're miles away from where the fires are taking place, you don't have a choice, folks. You need to address this, and you need to address it very, very seriously. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dickinson. Seeing no more folks wishing to make a statement on public comment, let's move on to regular business. And General Manager Weigel.
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 4A. Is discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 45-2020 declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider adoption of resolution 45-2020 declaring a continued local emergency in the CCSD area due to the coronavirus pandemic. Just for clarification, we have a follow-on item that will discuss editing the periodicity of approving the continued resolution, but this is a resolution just to continue it at this point.
All right. Thank you, General Manager Weigold. Would anybody, I'll open this for discussion. I don't think there'll be too much. Oh, yes. Director Rice, go right ahead.
If there's no public comment, I would make a motion.
That's just what I was going to request. Go right ahead.
I would move approval of Resolution 45-2020, declaring a continued local emergency in the Cambria Community Services District due to the coronavirus pandemic.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Do we have a second?
I would second that.
All right. All right, Haley, we have a motion and a second. Would you please call the roll?
Yes. Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer? President Farmer?
Aye. Moving on to item 4B, and this seems to be from the two members of the ad hoc committee with regard to the strategic planning. So either Vice President Steidel or Director Pearson can address this.
And President Farmer, I'll introduce the item if you wish.
Okay.
And pass that to the ad hoc committee.
All right, excuse me, go right ahead.
President Farmer, agenda item 4B is discussion and consideration to schedule dates and venues for the strategic planning community meeting and retreat. Staff is recommending that the board of directors discuss and consider scheduling a date and venue to hold a community meeting to receive input for the strategic planning retreat at which the district strategic plan will be developed. Additionally, staff recommends the board discuss and consider scheduling a date and venue to hold a strategic planning retreat. Both directors Pearson and Vice President Steidel, as members of the ad hoc committee on this, will present this item further for the board discussion and deliberation.
All right. Excuse me for my faux pas there. So both directors and Director Pearson, Vice President Steidel, I'll go ahead and make some comments, and then we have a member of the public that would like to make a comment.
Okay, I'm going to basically review the process for everybody so that you see where we're at, and then the ad hoc committee has a recommendation on how to move forward with this. So first of all, we want to schedule the strategic planning retreat for this fall. The process was to have the a special board meeting to accomplish this, and we think it should happen in three phases. The first two phases will enable the community to provide input to the process, and then the second, and then the last one would be the planning session itself. The process will be led by Marilyn Snyder, a consultant that we've already talked to and approved and got her on board. We're basically doing this in her format because she's the consultant and we think that the process is right on. So we would have a couple of meetings with the community to get their input, and what the process is going to consist of this year and this meeting and this planning session would be, number one, a what they call a SWOT analysis, which is the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats to the community. And we would discuss those, and those would then open everybody's eyes and ears to the facts that, okay, this is the things that we really need to be worried about and that we need to be considering, some of which were brought up in public comment today. We would do a mission and purpose statement, why the organization exists and for whom it serves. Then we would come up with goals, and we would break out into individual groups to discuss goals and bring goals forward, and then decide on 5 to 6 goals for the next 2 or 3 years for the community and for the district. And then the objectives, we would go back, meet again, and take those goals and have some objectives for each one of those goals, which would be specific, measurable results and outcomes that would allow us to keep track of our progress towards reaching the goals that we set. I think this is a process that I've certainly used before in my businesses, and it works extremely well and makes sure that you're actually doing what you say you want to get done and following through on things. So our recommendation from the ad hoc committee and the staff as we looked at this was first, the first meeting that we would have with the community would be on Wednesday, September 30th. It would be a special meeting. The special meeting would start on September 30th. That would be a Zoom session, probably from like 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock, and it would be purely to get community input. So we would ask the community first to send their input on a form that we would have out on the CCSD website that would be easily filled out, that would ask them to delineate what they thought the strengths of the district and community are, what the weaknesses of the district and community are, and then what they think the goals should be for the community. On September 30th, we would have a Zoom session, and everybody that wanted to speak would get 2 minutes to summarize their input. Whether they sent us a form or not, we would give everybody a chance to give us the input of what they think our goals should be and what our strengths are and what our weaknesses are. So that would be the first of the two community input sessions. We would then adjourn that session to a date certain of October 1st, the following day. That second meeting, we hope to do as an in-person meeting in the Vets Hall from 10 a.m. until noon. The way we would do that would be to have social distancing for the board members and for the staff, and invite people in one at a time from a waiting room, and have them give us their input in person. Again, summarizing the input that they hopefully gave us on the forms. Each again would be allowed 2 minutes to speak and give us their input. At the end of that meeting, we would adjourn that session to a date certain of October 9th, which is a Friday. And that would be the actual board strategic planning session. And there, 15 members, between 15 and 18 people would participate in the planning session, starting at 8 o'clock in the morning and finishing between 4 and 4:30. And at that meeting, we would establish those goals and objectives that we talked about. We would establish a mission statement, and we would be able to move forward from there. So that is the recommendation from the ad hoc committee. And I now would hand the floor over to Vice President Steidel to add what comments that she has before we open for general discussion.
Well, I think that Director Pearson summarized very well the particulars of what we want to accomplish. And first and foremost, of course, is getting as much feedback from the community, from as many members of the community as possible. We do understand also that if for some reason we're still in the position we are with COVID, and depending on what constraints may be in place at that point in time, that second community meeting might migrate to a Zoom meeting, but we would only know that as the time approaches, and then we would adjust accordingly. I guess one added piece of information that I'll address is the third meeting that was referred to, that was the board planning meeting. The 15 number that Director Pearson identified are board members and staff members from the CCSD staff. Mr. Weigold's identification of the individuals to be able to participate in their process, but also, of course, take into account legal being part of the process and so forth. That number is something that was established as a ceiling from our consultant in terms of the number of people who can effectively operate in that kind of situation, and it's kind of an optimum target because it allows that way to be able to break out into individual work groups to work through the items that have come forward as far as the strengths, weaknesses, and potential goals. So that's pretty much what had been under discussion. One other piece of information, I guess, would be that the community sessions would be something not conducted by the consultant, only the board session as the third meeting is conducted by the consultant. For the community input, Director Pearson and I would act as co-chairs for being able to handle the logistics of folks coming in to be able to give us feedback to fit into the process. And that would be the extent of the additional information from me.
All right. Well, thank you both for, I think, a very good overview of what we would anticipate to have happening. Haley, I see we have a couple of members of the public who would wish to speak on that. So would you bring them forward, please?
Yes. The first member of the public that wishes to speak is Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. President and Deputy Clerk. I would ask you to remind me why a strategic plan is needed now, in addition to the Board of Directors goals and mission already adopted, but I won't ask that. What I will ask is this. Will, and I think you just answered, I was going to ask, will public comment be allowed during the retreat? The answer is obviously no, because the public are not part of the retreat, the third meeting. I assume that the retreat is open to the public. I wrote in my little notes here, but that's wrong. But how can a retreat not open to the public be in agreement with the Brown Act? If it's not a public meeting open to the public, then no official decisions can be made at the retreat. How will it be decided what official actions will be put on the agenda for consideration at a future board meeting, which is open to the public? And I want to say, in addition to my notes, these days I'm getting too old to be like I used to be, a nice girl, to be honest about it. And so I'm just going to say what's on my mind as a 78-year-old woman who chirps a lot. And that's a reference to the past. With CCSD, as you might recognize. I find this arrangement very condescending to the public. What this is the board and the two members of the ad hoc committee moderate the first two sessions, where the board listens to the public, letting us in one by one in case coronavirus hasn't zipped away yet. And then maybe going to Zoom in case the coronavirus still hangs out. But then you're all getting together somehow, all 15, on the 9th of October from 8 a.m. until 4 to 4:30 to deliberate without any member of the public present. Now, friends, I disagree with a couple of people who are running for this, the blank offices of director. But I think, I won't go into that, but I think one of the issues that's coming up in this campaign is the public entitled to hear the deliberations of the board as the board engages in decision making? And there are some people in this town who think we should not be. I am a believer in the public. That's where I start. I'm a believer in our oversight responsibilities, oversight over you. That's what the California Constitution says. And I will not sit blithely aside while I get my 2 minutes, along with many dozens of the community, I would hope, I suppose, and then you go off for 4 hours and deliberate without members of the public. No, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. The next person to speak, Haley?
The next person to speak is Tina Dickinson.
Thank you, Haley. Thank you, President Farmer. Wow. Board, I'm so disparaged and discouraged with what you have come up with. It is your job as a board, as has been the job of boards in the past, to have goals and objectives for each year that you participate as a board. How is it possible that the ad hoc committee can be doing this work as they do behind the scenes and come to the public with 3 dates September 30th, October 1st. And then the third one is 8.5 hours, 8 a.m. to 4:30, without the public participating. And I find this timing so interesting that it's all before the election. I really, really, really resent this. I think it stinks. And I can't imagine that you would put us, the public, and yourselves, when we're going through COVID. It hasn't changed. We don't have a vaccine for it. We're still living the same way we have been since February this year. And yet this is what you're planning. It is, again, irresponsible. You are not being sensitive to the needs of the community. I mean, who do you really represent? Who do you represent? Ask yourselves. This is outrageous that two people can come up with this and we're supposed to put up with it? No way. No way. This should be tabled and put off till after the election, because I find the timing on this really, really interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Let me bring this back to the board for a further discussion, comments on public comment, how you feel in general about this opportunity challenge that seems to be before us. Let me just flip over here. Director Rice, go right ahead.
Can Mr. Carmel, would you please address the issue raised about the Brown Act with the retreat, please?
Yes, Director Rice. So as I understand it, the meeting, it's a special meeting of the Board of Directors. That'll start on September 30th. It'll be devoted entirely to public comment. It'll then be adjourned to the next day, October 1st, which will be also an adjourned special meeting devoted entirely to public comment. That will be adjourned then to the 9th, where the public will be obviously entitled to be present for the board and staff to develop the strategic plan. So there won't be a public comment section of the third day, the October 9th meeting, because it's an adjourned special meeting. You only need to have one public comment. But I think it's pretty important to note that the two first meetings are entirely devoted to public comment, and that the public will be able to attend the third day and watch and observe.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So the public would not be excluded. No. Except that there won't be any further comments taken.
That's correct.
At that time. Okay. Would the president be able to still have the discretion to allow it or no?
The president always has discretion to allow it.
Okay. And I just want to, in speaking to some of the concerns I've heard, the process for annual goals, as long as I've been on the board, was primarily whoever was president came up with them, brought them in January, the board approved them, essentially, with a little bit of discussion. I very, very vividly recall when Director Robinette was on the board and was president the first time, she had made up a list of goals that she didn't even want to have any discussion about even prior to the meeting. So the fact that the board is going to have a discussion, the public is going to be there. It isn't done in the privacy of one's own brain, and the public can participate. I personally, since it's only 2.5 weeks away, I personally am not comfortable with an in-person meeting. If there were a way that I could participate remotely and people who want to be there in person can be, I wouldn't object to that. But I think it's far too soon for us to be trying to have an in-person meeting, especially considering all the new information we're getting with schools starting up again. So that's my position on that. I am a bit uncomfortable. Thank you for that further explanation about the adjourned meetings and that this is essentially a continuation of what we were doing. As far as the timing, I also had concerns about this when, and I think I raised them when we were approving the contract for the person, and the timing, I don't know if this makes it better or worse, was primarily so that I could be involved because I wasn't running and I am not running for re-election, meaning that if it were to wait until after the election, that I would no longer be on the board. Now, wild horses couldn't keep me away from having to going to one of these, whether I'm on the board or not. The only thing keeping me away would be as if it were in person, and I could not participate remotely, because I think that creates an unfairness for people who really cannot, because of health reasons, participate in person, even if they would like to. They just physically, they're too concerned for whatever reason. I mean, we all now know it's not a hoax, but there are people who are who have genuine concerns, and I don't think it's fair to force them to have no option in that situation. Personally, and I'm just going to pull another Cassandra out of my hat like usual, I personally think that it's a little crazy to be going on moving forward as if there's nothing happening, as if nothing's going to change once this pandemic is finally, we have a vaccine and we can finally see people in person again on a regular basis. I think that climate change has been, it's been drastically demonstrated this month in California with the fires. I don't know. Personally, dusk and dawn are two of my favorite times of day. I like that kind of twilight look, but all day long, it's a little bit much. So I still am fine having it be after the election, because like I said, I've been coming to these meetings since 2008, 2009. I don't think I'm going to stop just because I'm not on the board. And my input, I would hope it would be just as valuable whether I'm still in the position or not. I would hope, but whatever happens is what's going to happen. But that, I just wanted to address that timing issue. And I do really appreciate everyone wanting me to be part of that as a board member. And but I'm ambivalent either way, whatever way the rest of the board wants to go, I'm cool with that.
All right. Thank you, Director Rice. Director Howe, you had a comment or two to make.
Yes, a comment or two. First of all, I do appreciate the need for a strategic plan, which we have been lacking. There's no question about that. And it's particularly the case, which I think our present state of affairs is making Mr. Weigel's job especially difficult, because it's a little hard to manage a district if one doesn't know what direction the district is going. So I fully appreciate the need for what we're discussing. However, as regards the second meeting, if members of the public are only brought in one at a time, then members of the public are unable to hear what each other is saying. And while that may not be important in terms of the Brown Act, I do think in terms of just general public participation, that's not a good idea. The other thing is the series of three meetings, while it may follow the letter of the law, certainly does not follow the spirit of the law. And I think in terms of the third meeting, the 8 till 4:30, in the presentation, nothing was really indicated as to how the public was going to be able to observe that meeting. So there are some issues there. However, a bigger, and where I do feel quite strongly, as I second what Director Rice is saying, that we're talking about right now something which is slightly more than 2 weeks away. Schools are not opening. I think that two things. I will not appear in public until there is a vaccine, period. So, but beside that, I think that this district has a responsibility to engineer a situation and cause people to gather where that situation may actually exacerbate the spread of the virus is the height of irresponsibility. So I think that if this plan is pursued, it needs to be postponed at least till some reasonable time when we can anticipate the possibility of being able to meet physically. If this arrangement were entirely virtual, I would approve of it. But as it is not entirely virtual, I think we are whistling in the dark to assume that in 3 and 2.5 weeks, things are actually going to get better. If anything, they'll probably get worse, because usually about 2 weeks after a major holiday is when we see the results of that holiday spread. So the situation is not, it is not normal. It is not getting better. So kudos to, I think the plan is interesting and under other circumstances would be fine, but I really cannot support it in its present form. If it go, if you were to risk to rearrange it so that it was virtual and so that the public was always able to see and observe, I could definitely support it. The other thing, and I'll, my last comment on this, is that if you do go forward with this, and if you do use a virtual format, I highly recommend that you do not use the webinar format. I think, again, the public needs to feel that it is participating, and they need to be able to see each other, and they need to be able to see who else is at the meeting. The webinar does not allow that. So, and you can conduct, I've been at other Zoom conferences of more than 200 people. It works just fine. There is no problem. You have to have a protocol. You have to have someone muting and unmuting people, but it can be done. You will have about 3 screens of folks to look at. It's not a problem. And the last one I was at had people from all around the world. So there are, technically, it's definitely doable. So that's all I wish to say. A, I don't approve of going physical at this point, and I don't anticipate, probably it would be unrealistic to think that we could anytime before the first of the year, and we'd be lucky even at that point. And the other thing is that if we do go all virtual, then I definitely recommend that we use the video conference model rather than the webinar model.
Thank you. Thank you, Director Howe, for those well thought out comments. Director Rice, you wish to remark one more time?
Yeah, just 2 points. Will there be some sort of, I don't know, catalog's the best word I can think of the services and programs the district provides? Because I know a lot of people, even people who are closely involved in one aspect of CCSD, aren't aware of all the programs that are available, such as when you have a really, when you have to change your batteries in your smoke detector. If your ceilings are really high, you can call the fire department. They'll come over and help you change them. So what kind of it might be helpful for the public to have kind of an inventory of what are the things we do, not fixing pipes, but direct to customer type services. What are the things that the district does that directly impacts Cambria residents? Because I think that can make a difference. You know, people, then people aren't suggesting things that, well, we're already doing that and we're already doing this. The second suggestion I have is because I do agree with some of Director Howell's, not all of them, but some of Director Howell's comments, and perhaps there's a way that we could get a structure that would provide additional clear guidance at that 30,000 foot level, at the board level, during this time. Things like what President Farmer said earlier. We should be looking at what are innovations, what are some things we can try in a town this size that might scale up? What are the kinds of things that the district wants to do in terms of, I mean, not accepting just old technologies? How new do we want to get? There's some guidance that we might be able to, if we scale back the full strategic planning, maybe some questions that we could even answer as part of a regular meeting to help the GM have a better idea of the direction we want to go. I mean, I'm kind of torn on this. I kind of feel the same way. There's nothing I would like more to be in the room with everybody. I mean, having the last part of my service on this board as part of Zoom is horrifying to me, but that doesn't mean we can't get things done, but it also means that maybe we shouldn't be trying to bite off more than we can chew at the moment, considering everything else that is happening. I don't know. I don't know if that any of that information helps or not.
Yes, Director Pearson.
Before I speak, President Farmer, I would like to get feedback from you before I go. So do you have some feedback for us other than what we've heard?
Personally, I'm in favor of the concept because it seems like right now, and I'm kind of reluctant to say this, especially being board president, but in some ways it seems as if the movement of the district forward with a clear vision and clear eyes as to the challenges that we're facing and the opportunities that we need to embrace. First, identify what those challenges, create those opportunities, what those are. I think getting together, especially hearing from the public, we're so grateful to have a very active and intelligent public. You know, getting feedback from them for 2 days, to me, is a great opportunity. With regard to though, getting together in person, that isn't going to happen. I think that initial idea of the board being present and then folks coming in one at a time, even if the people, let's say, well, there's no way that people are going to be in another room because that's like probably COVID-19, not the way to go. And there would have to be some way, if people were here attending the meeting in person and coming out one at a time, that they would be able to see everything that people are saying, be able to hear as well as see what everybody is saying. But the idea of doing it in public, especially the first two, probably isn't going to work. That would have to be, as Director Howe said, not a webinar, but something different than that, that allows more public involvement, let's say. And with regard to the third meeting, personally, this is just me, even though I'm 76 years old, I guess I feel like a 20-year-old, I'm immune to this and nothing's going to happen. It's kind of the mindset I have, which is probably kind of impractical. But the idea of 15 members of staff getting together, I think there was a suggestion this would be a catered event. Well, I don't think that would happen at all. So this would have to be all done visually, and how it would be done visually on the third meeting with Ms. Snyder kind of coordinating everything, so to speak. It sounds like a serious challenge, even though it's something that I personally feel we definitely do need to do at some point. And I'd love to do it right now. It seems like there's too many, not so much contradictions, but challenges as to how to do this in a way that will please everyone and be practical and, like I said, help us move forward, because I think we really do need to do that. So those are my thoughts. So, David, back to you.
Good. Thank you. All good input. I think when the ad hoc was formed, we were kind of directed to see if we could get this done before the election happened. So that's why we came up with the current plan. We knew we had kind of, half baked. Okay. But we did the best we could with what we were put in front of us. First off, we're not trying to get around the Brown Act at all. And the real challenge is the third day when we try to have breakout sessions and that kind of stuff to boil up ideas on what the goals would be and what the strengths, weaknesses are and all that kind of thing. That's very difficult to do in with having public comment along the way, because it doesn't allow for a good process to happen that way. That's why we had a lot of public input at the beginning, so that would generate a lot of those strengths, weaknesses, and thoughts and all that kind of thing. And I think one of the things that we missed when we were putting it together was perhaps after that session, we would come back and have another special session that would present the thing to the community and to the board for, again, deliberation. These are the goals and objectives that we came up with. Let the community, again, comment on those, and let the board, again, have one more shot at it before we then took action on it and actually adopted those goals. And I think that might be the step that we really need to do, saying that the third day, the retreat, is actually an idea session that would bubble up the proposed goals and objectives, and then bring them in front of the board and the community again for approval. Whether we need it or not is I think a moot point. I think we have to have this. I think President Farmer stated it very well, is that when you're president, it's very, very difficult because you're trying to get things on the agenda that are urgent, that are things that are right in front of us that need to get done. And we don't get to discuss those things that are very important to the community, but are not urgent. And things like the forest management, things like climate change, things like net zero, things like a recreation and community plan that we're asking the pros to work on, and how do we end up with a park department if we do. All of these things are things that we need to discuss, but we never seem to get to because we're always doing these urgent things and not the important stuff that we need to get to. And only by having a strategic planning session and a retreat where we get those things on goals and in objectives can we then march forward and actually get those things on our agendas and get them accomplished, I feel. I am open to more suggestions on how to get public input. I agree that it's very difficult to do, and maybe just Zoom sessions are fine. But to me, based upon the input that we've got and everything, I think we would be best to table this issue until the next board comes on board in December, and then they can take it up and they can move forward with it at the pace that they feel is the right pace for them. Thank you.
Thank you, David. Director Hall, you wish to speak once again.
Thank you. Yes, first of all, to the ad hoc committee, you did an excellent job. I don't really mean any criticism on that regard. It's just we've been hoping that things would get better sooner than they have, and so that's mm-hmm. just the way it is. As to the assuming that you can, I guess that it's the real issue is how that third meeting would be conducted. Again, as long as it's, from my point of view, as long as it's virtual, so that no one is endangered, that's A. But B, and this I don't know how it would work, whenever there is a majority of the board present at any breakout session, that breakout session must be visible by the public. And I don't know how that can be worked, but if that can be resolved, then I can see. But otherwise, I don't see how we can even do breakout sessions and still be within the Brown Act. You know, if you got three board members, you know, hunched over and huddling about something and the public cannot see it, that's, as far as I understand it, that would be a clear violation of the Brown Act. So I think what the subcommittee did is fine. I think Director Pearson's suggestion to perhaps table this matter until after the election is also probably a good idea for two reasons. One, we'll have a new board who will then be for 2 years looking forward. And so rather than have what could be considered a lame duck board try to set the direction for the new board, it seems like probably a better choice. There was another point. Oh, yes. And then presumably in December, maybe we'll have a clearer picture as to how the future is going to unfold. personally, my own approach, and I think you're hearing it, is that I prefer the somewhat more pessimistic approach. I prefer to be surprised when things go better than I anticipate. So I'm never encouraged when folks say, oh yeah, we'll be able to open up in a month. Yeah, right. So at any rate, I really do think the idea of the work was good. The plan is good as far as it went. But I do believe that, yes, I think tabling it would be the best choice at this point.
All right. The two ladies on the board wish to speak. Vice President Steinwell, let's go with Director Rice first and then get back to you, Cindy, since you're a member of the ad hoc committee, and you might be able to digest more in that fashion. So, Amanda, go right ahead.
Thank you, President Farmer. I just wanted to say, there's very little that I remember that being taught in high school. One of the things I remember very vividly is in driver's ed, they told me never drive when you're upset. Don't make decisions when you're in a panic or scared of anything, because you will not make good ones. This is a point I made in 2014 when we were getting the loan, that we should not be making decisions while we're afraid that we might be out of water. We should not be making decisions when all of us are not at our best, because most of us are staying home most of the time, whether we're working or not. It doesn't put me in a good headspace, I know. And I'm glad to hear that tabling is something that Director Pearson and hopefully Vice President Steidel are okay with. As much as I want to participate in this, and I know the general, and I know how badly it's need. Believe me when I say, I know how badly this is needed. But this is probably not the right time to be doing it for a host of reasons. Let's make sure that we give the general manager the support he needs, and that he knows he can talk to the president and vice president when he needs guidance, or come to the full board when he needs further guidance. John, you're not in this alone. And we want to be supportive and helpful. So you don't have to run to the board every time you have a question about something. But I'd be okay with tabling.
Thank you, Director Rice. Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Farmer. I'm like I think several of you. I'm of such mixed emotions about this. I mean, we could work through the thing and say, we could do the Zoom meetings for everything. The Zoom at the planning session with the board and staff could be difficult because the breakout sessions couldn't be represented simultaneously in terms of viewing and those kinds of things. I don't think there's an issue with the directors being in the circumstance that you described, Director Howell, just because the breakout sessions in terms of their quantity would assume one or maybe two directors in each one of those breakout sessions. So there isn't the kind of situation that would create a Brown Act violation. When we approached the idea of trying to facilitate the community input as much as possible, we took into consideration, okay, let's think of it in terms of one Zoom meeting and then one in person potentially that would become a Zoom meeting if for some reason there wasn't a viable way to do that, which there probably isn't. It was just that, okay, let's kind of march through the considerations. Have one in the evening and one during the day so that the widest possible opportunity exists for people to participate. And then the bottom line of just needing the strategic planning. And for point of reference, the goals that are being discussed here are more of a long-term goal. It isn't the kind of goals that we're going to have for the next 6 months or a year, as far as this board's concerned. It's supposed to be a 3-year view towards the goals they want to establish for the board. And I hearken back to something that I used as a basis of my running for the office, and that was that I wanted to try to see the CCSD become more proactive instead of reactive. And I think that we've been able to facilitate a lot of that in a number of things that are going on, but I think where the biggest gap still exists has to do with the concepts related to strategic planning, because it's very, very easy to get drawn off base to keeping your eye on the goal. If something's coming up in front of your face all the time, you don't know whether that's something that as a board as a whole you need to be looking at and taking action towards, and it puts GM Weigold in, you know, a very difficult position of being able to direct his staff when they come to him and say, well, what are we supposed to be working on? And, you know, he's either put in the position of saying, I don't know, or every time he's faced with something to do operationally, he has to come back to the board, which is a difficult position to operate a staff within. But to stand back from it and to recognize also that the reality is we are where we are because of COVID. There are things coming in and pressing to us that we don't have any control over. The attempt, I think, was with the ad hoc committee to try to find some way to be able to accommodate that. And in fact, the information that the consultant came back to us with also had a plan for doing the Zoom in a retreat environment. But we had to start someplace in terms of having this conversation with the board. So it's that balance of, okay, do we push it away from ourselves one more time in terms of looking at strategic planning and trying to establish some parameters for the board to be able to have a focus toward things that is based on feedback from the community for strengths and weaknesses and where we want to be, you know, several years from now. And being able to take the knowledge of this board to do it, or do we wait until after the elections where potentially there are folks involved in the board environment who will not yet be up to speed with some of the things that are very specific to the board, which frankly, you don't understand or get the impact of until you're actually serving on the board and you're dealing with that on a day-to-day basis. So that's where my... I will, you know, I'll certainly go with whatever the rest of the board members feel in the position that they want to move toward in this. I just don't want to see this board push things out too much further in being able to take this action. And if it's something that we can pick up again in December, fine. I don't think the circumstances that we'll be dealing with it in are going to be any different than they are right now. And just for the consumption of the community, the date and the way that the dates were worked back from the conversations that Director Pearson and I had were based on the availability of the consultant. This consultant is very active in the support activities that she gives to a number of organizations all through Southern California, Central Coast, and Northern California. So the October 9th date was something that she and her facilitator, who is going to be recording all of this information, were available. And then we backed off of that point in time to be able to come up with the dates for the community input. So please, for the community's information, the intent wasn't to be able to create some kind of targeting that was based on what the elections are or what potential outcomes the elections may be. It was just literally the practicality of being able to use the time of the consultant when she and her recording are available. So that's my additional contribution to what we've discussed, and I will certainly go forward with the majority of the board in the way that they feel about tabling or whatever. It's just that I've got it. I want to be able to move forward on something, and it's just in practicality. I understand too that that's just not necessarily the answer this time around. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Director Rice, you wish to comment again, please.
Okay, so David had me talked into tabling. Cindy has me talked back into having it. but I actually am going to recommend we table, but I just want to make a couple of comments for going forward. The first is that I would hope that any new directors approach any task that like this with humility, just as the current directors would, because when you come on and you're brand new, as Vice President Steidel and Director Howell are rapidly forgetting, but no, much more frequently, much more recently than the director, that it is a bit of an overwhelming situation, and to bring new directors in and have them immediately in that, but it's also a crash course in the learning curve of CCSD too. So there's advantages to that. Also, Vice President Steidel, there's a reason we go vice president to president. So hopefully the new board will choose you as president next year, which means that you will be able to ensure going forward, fingers crossed. And the two other quick things. One is, I don't know why the period is 3 years and not a longer period. We don't have anything right now, so anything would be good, but it seems like 3 years is a weird number to pick, and I don't need an answer right now. I just wanted to put that out there. You might want to pick something that's either a year more than a term for a director, or even just 4 years. I just wanted to ask that question. 3 years doesn't seem like very long-range planning to me. And then I provided a book to Director Howell that I bought with the district credit card at a CSDA conference called Becoming a Policy Board. And I would encourage Director Howell to get reading on it, because it does have some really good ideas of how to set things like these longer guiding principles, like of policies at the even higher than 30,000 foot level, and how to navigate those waters. So those are the things that I would recommend. And I've taken too much time on an item we're going to be hopefully tabling, but that's all I have.
I don't think you need to worry about taking too much time, Director Rice. Director Howell.
Yes. First of all, yes, I'm about halfway through the book, and it's excellent, and it's kind of actually sort of exciting. So I'll let the rest of you guys know when it's available. And as I say, I highly recommend it. What I'd like to do is actually move. I would like to move to table this item actually until the first meeting in January. Reason I say that is because the item is whether or not to do as planned. So by giving the new board a month to think about it, and then by the time you get to January, they would be able to discuss about whether they want to go forward with this plan. So I move that this be tabled until one of the January meetings.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. I just, we can take a vote on this, and then maybe we should just do that, and then I'll make a couple of final comments. So if everybody feels comfortable with this, Haley, why don't you go ahead and take the roll call, please?
Sure. Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. So a couple of things I wanted to make a comment on. First, two members of the public.
President Farmer, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Sorry about that. It was the most eloquent thing I've said, and you couldn't hear me. I'll try again. So I was just remarking on the fact that we had two members of the public, folks that we, not only does the board and staff highly respect, but these people are highly regarded throughout the community for what it is that they contribute to our meetings. And I guess in some ways I can understand they felt like this process might be insulting to the public. I'd like to think the fact that the first two meetings totally involved the public with their input. And even though they wouldn't necessarily be able to comment, they would at least be able to observe the third meeting. I think that's the best we could do with regard to in public and getting their feedback on these very important issues that we'll be discussing. And the second one is, doing the third meeting with 15 members of staff for 8 hours, 8.5 hours, on a visual meeting, I don't know why. I know it's probably going to have to happen because it is. The idea of not being able to chit-chat with folks, sit down, share that little nosh at lunchtime, chat on breaks and that type of thing, which would seem to be, a really important part of the process of the staff gathering together and being able to see body language and that type of thing. That's something I feel would be a vital part of that particular process. How it ever gets to that, I have no idea, but those are just my comments. So let's move on to item 4C. And General Manager Weigel, go right ahead.
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 4C is discussion and consideration of adoption of draft policy 4150, CCSD policy and procedures for filling vacancies on board of directors by appointment. The policy committee is recommending the board of directors review the draft policy 4150 and consider adoption of the same.
Hold on. Director Howell, would you like to make a comment on this?
Yes, sir. I can kind of go ahead and pick up the ball from General Manager Weigold. What you have is, first of all, that what you have in front of you, first of all, it spends quite a lot of time just quoting the statutory requirements. However, the last section talks about how to fill a board vacancy by appointment. And it's actually two parts. And as we go forward, I'm going to actually move that one of these be tabled until later. The process that the committee is suggesting for filling a board vacancy is in two parts. The first part, which I'm going to suggest that we table until after the election, has to do with how to replace a board member if the resignation occurs during the first year, I believe. 12 months, within the 12 months after the election. And because this is coming, and I can summarize that very briefly, which is that it was the feeling of the committee, and it was pretty, I don't remember the exact, I think it was this passed with a unanimous vote from the committee. They felt that the next highest vote getter would be the appropriate person to fill a vacancy if that were to occur during the first year after an election. Because we are coming right up to an election, I do not think it would be appropriate to discuss that particular method at this time. In fact, there's really only one time when I think this could be productively discussed, And that would be during the second year after an election, when whoever the sitting board could then decide for the future. But to decide when we're coming up to an election and the slate is already known, or to decide after the election when we know who the next highest vote getter is going to be, leads to too many other issues, and it's just better to leave that alone. So I'm going to recommend that we do not adopt that section. However, the next section down, which is 4150.3.2, which is to how to appoint someone to fill the vacancy from a pool of volunteers. And there's two main points in there. One moment while I'm looking at the council's. Council had a couple of comments on this, so I want to address those first. On the page 9 of your packet, down at the bottom of the page, it's the red line speaking about public comment. I'm going to recommend, I do see that, and I'm going to recommend a change, and that this be modified so that public comment will be taken at one time only after all the applicants have been interviewed. The objective here, the reason that the wording was intended, it was not the committee's feeling that the public should be questioning the applicants. So the idea was the public can weigh in on the slate of available applicants at the beginning of the process, or at some point during the process, but they should not be allowed to ask questions of the applicants themselves. So that's that particular item. The other one has to do with the term secret ballot on the next page. If you look at the red line there, again, yes, that's actually was not, that didn't come out quite right. Obviously, and under the Brown Act, you can't have a secret ballot because the public needs to know how the directors vote. But what the committee wanted to do was to have they wanted to have a vote by ballot such that the other board members would not know what their fellow board members were voting for. Whereas under a normal situation, as we take a roll call, we can see how it's developing, and the last person on the roll call will get to be the swing vote because you can see how it's moving. So the object here was not a secret ballot in the sense that neither the public nor the board should know how the board members vote, but that the ballot should be, and I don't know how to word it, and perhaps Mr. Carmel can help me on this. There should be a written ballot such that the ballots are filled out, turned into the district clerk, who then publicizes the ballots so that everyone can see how everybody voted. And then the object, what we were hoping for, if you're willing, is we wanted to try to go towards what we call a ranked choice voting. And I think it's reasonably well explained there, so that if you have a number of candidates, yeah, it's kind of tricky, but you have a number of candidates, and if one candidate does not get the majority, then the candidate who got the least amount of first votes, you go to those ballots second votes, and you keep working down until you find until you do get a majority. I can visualize in my mind, and I've read explanations, but this is not necessarily a hill I'd want to die on. What's important to me is that there do be that we don't do it as we have sometimes done in the past, where someone makes a motion to put somebody in the position and then there's a vote on that. And if that fails, someone makes a motion to put somebody else in the position. And if that fails, we just keep working down. That's not a very productive way to do it. And it also has the effect of rejecting people in a way which is, again, we're asking for people to stand up and volunteer their time pretty much. So we want to try to avoid hurt feelings as much as possible. So my recommendation is if we can't do the ranked choice, if we just can't quite figure that, at the very least, it should be a ballot such that two things, that we vote, you're voting for as an election rather than as a, it's not, in other words, a yes or no motion. It's an election where you vote for the candidate that you want. And you keep, if you don't do ranked choice, you just keep balloting until you get a, until you get, somebody gets a majority, or eventually the board decides a majority is not possible, and then that has to go to the Board of Supervisors. So that's a long presentation. Let me see. I think that's, does anyone have any questions on that? It's a little hard for me to, well, I'll tell you what, to make life simple on this whole thing so that we're discussing only one thing. I'd like to move, first of all, that section 4150.3.1 of the proposal be tabled until, be tabled indefinitely, basically. And so that what we're really only dealing with is 4150.3.2, which is the bottom of the page. So that would be, I think I'll go ahead and move that just so I can make life a little simpler. So I move that the procedure recommended under 4150.3.1 be tabled until some future date.
I would second that, but I'd have it omitted for now, and it can be brought back later. I don't think tabling it is the right thing. Why don't we just delete that paragraph for now, and then, you know, at some future date when it's proper to insert that back in, we can insert it back in if we need. But I think the process that you came up with in the second paragraph, the second thing, is a great one. I'd like to make some suggestions on the voting, but I think that's the way to do it, and just omit that other section on the guide that you know is the next in line, complicated, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Just omit that from it, from the policy for now, I think would work.
Mr. President, may I respond briefly on that?
Of course.
Yes, that would work. The reason I suggested table is it tables indefinitely and would have to be voted to be brought back forward. So it kind of amounts to the same thing. But if you would prefer to just skip it entirely, that would be okay also. I kind of like the tabling idea because it's in the record and we know that it's sitting out there, but you know, if you never bring it off the table, it stays on the table forever. So, you know.
Okay. Well, you're much more familiar with Robert's rules than I am. So, if you think that's the right way to do it,
I'd go either way on that.
Now,
why don't we get some feedback?
I'm thinking it'd be simpler if all of the directors voted for their top three candidates. 1, 2, 3, who they think, obviously their number one choice would be 1, 2, 3. Send it over to the clerk. She can read those, right? And she tallies them. If you get 1 point for being in the number one position, you get 2 points for being in the number two position, you get 3 points for being in the number three position. She adds them all up, right? Every candidate gets their total added up, and whoever has got the lowest number, like in golf, that person wins. That seems to me to conquer it without having repeated votes, and you get a consensus, basically, based upon who was the number one, two, and three choice. And also that eliminates the fact that if you've got 10 candidates, like we did have back in the day, that you know, the top three rise to the top and are voted in and get a decision very quickly. So that would be my suggestion on the voting. So otherwise, I think you did a great job.
Oh, thank you.
Before I go to Director Rice, Mr. Carmel, do you have any comments on how we should proceed with that first item that right now it's an idea of like tabling it, or I believe we had another option. Do you have anything to say on this?
Yes, I do, President Farmer. I think it's much cleaner to delete the paragraph, and if you want to revisit it later, then you revisit it later.
Okay.
And I think we would then renumber section 4150.32, 4150.31, and the subsections sequentially would be renumbered the same way.
Yeah. So I'm slightly confused. Do we vote on like tabling or just kind of pushing this aside, or we just let it go and vote on this other item that we seem to be more in concurrence on?
As a part of the motion, the motion maker would indicate that section 4150.3.1 will be deleted and the next section will be renumbered.
All right. Well, thank you. Well, it appears that the other three of the other board members, two of the members have their hands up. So let me go to Director Rice.
Another option for 4150.3.1 would be to delay implementation past the next election, because then it wouldn't, it would be there, but it wouldn't be enacted until following the 2022 election or something like that, whatever the board, that's just another alternative. I don't want to make it more difficult, but that does allow for that. Now, I have some problems with that one, so I think I'm going to support deleting it, but there are some good things with it. I appreciate that there was a minimum number of percentage of votes, but that's also very difficult to determine because the percentage of votes based on what? I also am concerned about having it be for a full 12 months versus one of the number of days that is in the government code earlier in the that's listed earlier in the policy. Getting to the 4150.3.2.2. So the minimum requirements, I believe, are you have to live in the district and be 18. Can we just put that in there? Because we're not adding any additional requirements. Is that correct? At least based on this recommendation, there aren't any, you have to have a background in policy or you have to, you know, there's no other, is that true? A true statement, I think. Mr. Carmel, the only qualifications are you have to be 18 and live in the district, right?
You have to be a registered voter.
Registered voter in the district. So if we can swap minimum requirements for the words over 18 and a registered voter in the district, that would be more clear for people, I think, than having to figure out what minimum requirements might be. You mentioned briefly that public comment could also be done after the candidates get interviewed. Are you going to accept comment before they get interviewed, but not questions to the candidates? I'm just, because there's benefit to doing it at the very start, like from a member of the public who wants to make sure that, I mean, it prescribes that the board should get together and come up with a list of questions. So the public will know what questions we're going to be asking, theoretically, and that will have been done in a public meeting. So they won't have to suggest questions necessarily. So maybe in that condition, it is okay to have them make comments about the candidates after their interviews, because that's actually, as a board member, that's where I would more prefer to hear the comments after hearing from all the applicants, right? Like, you should pick this person because X. That also can be more brutal personalized for the applicants. So I'm not sure. The reason there wasn't a policy on this was because every board in the past has basically come up with their own rules, because there aren't really any rules in the government code, which ended up in a mess one time, two times, but before that had never really come up as an issue. So having a set of guidelines is a good idea. I like the ranked choice voting, which is what Director Pearson explained when he was talking about writing down your top three. I don't know if having those written and then give them to the clerk or give them to the president to tabulate. I don't know if there's a difference about in that. Only reason I'd say the president is not because it's too important a job for district clerk, but because it is an important job, the president of the board, who's going to be appointing a new member of the board to do, just kind of optics wise, as much as I hate that word, it's a very good shorthand. And then I think those are my comments, and except for thank you to the policy committee and Director Hal for putting this together.
Can't hear you, Harry.
Can't hear you.
Still can't hear you.
Sorry about that.
There we go.
So we have, thank you. So we have still have two members of the board that wish to speak, but Mr. Barringer has had his hand up for quite a while, and it might be getting stiff for all I know. So Haley, and I hate to do this right now, but I'm just going to allow Jim to go ahead and speak in public comment, if no one minds. So, Mr. Barringer, go right ahead.
Okay, thanks. It's interesting that you nixed the next biggest loser from coming up and automatically being appointed. And I've always been against that, an election is an election. But it's interesting that the unanimous vote by the policy committee was to keep it. And now that we have, we know for sure that if someone left the district, either Karen, Tom, or perhaps Dave or Harry would automatically get back in. So it's just interesting. I do support not having that next biggest loser thing. The only other thing, though, is when you get to the district supervisors, I think that rather than having the Board of Supervisors appoint somebody, you could change it to the District 2 supervisor. It makes it much easier. It's just one guy. He probably wouldn't even have to have any kind of a meeting. He could just say, hey, I think that this is a guy you should select and you should appoint him. That's my input, rather than going to the whole Board of Supervisors.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. Let's get back, bring it back to the board now. And Vice President Steidel.
Thank you, President Farmer. And so actually, Director Pearson, I wanted to ask you just a point of clarification with the rank ordering that you had described. I guess I'm trying to envision how the 1-2-3 categorization would work, particularly with the point systems. You know, theoretically, if there are enough people that are being rank ordered, it's possible that there could be someone that would be the number 3 position on one director's ballot. And because it was only one director and it was the third position, they could actually be the number 3 choice and have the lowest number of points.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So.
So I'm just trying to understand. Yeah. I can certainly understand that if you're dealing with with a set number that's low, but if you're dealing with multiple, which we've been in the position of before, there's the potential there of unintended results.
Yeah, so you'd have to do it the other way around, right? If you rank number 1, you would get 3 votes, you would get 3 points. Number 2, you'd get 2 points.
Right.
3, you would get 1 point. So, yeah, That would be the right way to do it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Director Howard, you wish to...
You could do it. You can do it. You know, the... what is it? Logarithmic way. And the person that is voted number one gets 9 points. The person that's number two gets 3 points. And the person that's number three gets 1 point. But I don't think that would work.
All righty. Not being all that good at arithmetic, past adding and subtracting, Director Howell, would you like to make a comment, please?
Yes. Apropos of Director Rice's comments, so to make that substitution, the requirements would be stated right there, over 18, and a registered voter in the district can substitute for the wording of
minimum requirements?
Yeah. All applicants who are over 18 and registered voters in the district shall be eligible for consideration. That's the way I would read it. So that would be the one thing. And as to the public comment, my thought as I'm rereading my notes on this, I think thinking there is the best time for public comment would be after all the candidates have been interviewed. So the public can weigh in on the ones they like, gives them a chance to have their say, but they shouldn't be, they can attack people if they want, but they shouldn't be asking any questions, just telling the board who they prefer, if that's the case. That would be my choice on the public comment. It seems to me that's the logical place for the public. If I was a board member, I might want to know, and since not all the applicants may be introduced to everybody until after the process, it seems to me that would be the time for the public to weigh in. As to the arithmetic on the voting, that would be a separate issue. So if we could address what suggestion I made there first, then we can move to the other part. We may actually be able to bring this forward.
Director Howell, I just wanted to make a comment on what you just said. You know, when you talked about public comment and people getting up, and you used the word attack, probably not a good choice of words. Let's just say you can get up and, objectively comment on someone that you support, or perhaps you make a critical remark about someone that you're not that fond of. Attacking, I just felt kind of, that is kind of, didn't make me feel comfortable. I know you just kind of spoke that out there in your own Sagittarian way, but I just want to remark on that. So, does anybody, I think Director Howell, since if you're a little bit more organized with regard to this, you've heard the comments that we've all made. So would you wish to make a motion on this item? And yes, Director Wright, excuse me.
I'm sorry, I had my hand up. I just wanted to I went back and forth on this item for 4150.3.3, which is on page 10. Item B about the stalemate. The reason I'm going back and forth is this essentially when the board declares a stalemate because they can't pick somebody, then it automatically goes to the Board of Supervisors for their decision. I think what we did when we did the really fun appointments that we did a few years ago, when we came to a stalemate, there was another meeting that was scheduled. It kind of worries me to pull it out of the hands if they can't decide in a single meeting, but that's also good pressure for the board that they need to make a decision or it does go to the Board of Supervisors. I know part of that is due to the government code and the way that appointments are described in the government code. So I've just been going back and forth. Was there any discussion at the committee level on that might help me make a decision one way or the other?
Sure. President Farmer.
Right ahead.
Thank you. Actually, no. They didn't discuss it because the ranked choice situation would normally, if you follow it through, be very rare to achieve a stalemate. I mean, it could happen, but it's much rarer than just a regular kind of voting. So I think they may. I wasn't present at their discussions for this, other than when it came to the full committee, but that was my impression that it was good. You know, if we follow this in the remote possibility of a stalemate, then it should. But perhaps that, depending on what you do with paragraph A, we might need to change paragraph B. To Mr. Beringer, I want to say that the requirement, that's a statutory requirement. We don't have any choice in the matter if it goes back to the board. Now, I suppose if it's within the 60 days, we could the board could approach Mr. Gibson or somebody and ask him to appoint. They could legally, no, they can't do that. I see Amanda shaking her head too. But anyway, so it's not a choice. We don't have the choice to do that.
No choice. The government code controls that.
No choice at all. So that answers that question. So I guess I managed to not answer your question, Amanda.
Yes, somewhat. Tim had his hand up too.
I mean, no disrespect to the policy committee, but why wouldn't the full board vote on the final two applicants? You're a five-person board for a reason, and normally there's never a tie on a five-person board. So if there was a tie, why wouldn't there just be motions to and an action on no? No. Okay. I've never seen anything default to the Board of Supervisors in 34 years of watching appointments of vacant seats.
But stalemate when only four board members, because the resigning board member doesn't get to vote on it, right?
I forgot. Thank you.
Yeah. And I do understand ranked choice voting. I think it's an excellent choice. I think that this paragraph makes it hard to understand, because any explanation of it is hard to understand unless you have note cards and little physical things to move around so people understand what you're talking about. And I don't want to take time to explain it here, but I appreciate that that's a process that has been worked out by many, many countries, many, many states, counties. There's places all over the world where they do this successfully. I think ranked choice is a good option for us, and that's why I would support that section, because I know that that's the intent there. I would actually move approval of the policy 4150 with 4150.3.1 struck and the remaining sections renumbered appropriately. And that other one change under 4150.3.2.2 about minimum requirements.
So can I read that language? So would that be all applicants shall be a registered voter and a resident of the district?
And 18, over 18, I guess, is superfluous.
Yeah, they have to be registered voter. And then what about the Director Howell's comment about public comment taking place only after all interviews are completed? Is there any consensus on that?
Yeah, I think that needs to happen, but I think we need to clean up the paragraph on the ranked choice voting too, don't we?
I can't, you're muted, Don.
Sorry. May I suggest we deal with the first, maybe paragraph by paragraph is the easiest way to deal with this. So we've all agreed pretty much. I mean, I certainly would concur with striking 3.1.3.1 and renumbering. And then on nobody seems to have any problem with 3.2.1, so we're okay there. On 2.2, we had the requirements, and then the other question there was the timing of public comment. And then once we get to that, then we can talk about the next paragraph, if that's all right. Is that okay? So in terms of public comment, is it better before or after the people are interviewed? I don't have an opinion on it. Well, other than what I just told you, I don't have any I'm not heavily invested one way or another in it, as long as the public isn't allowed to ask questions of the applicants.
All right, let's do it after.
Okay.
I'd vote for after.
Okay, I don't
see. Yeah, that works for me.
Okay, so it could be members of the public in attendance at the special meeting may address the board only after all applicants have been interviewed. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Has anybody written that down? Yeah.
And I also think that we need to add the phrase, at a public meeting, the board shall prepare and agree upon a single set of questions that shall be asked. I think that we need to add the phrase at a public meeting, because then the public then gets input on what the questions will be.
Got it. Okay.
Is that acceptable to the rest of the board?
Okay, so that goes in advance of the special meeting. How would you say that? At a public meeting, in advance of
the
special meeting. Okay.
Yeah.
So just put at a public meeting right in front of at.
Yes.
Okay.
Because then it can be a special meeting if it needs to be, but it also could be at a regular meeting.
Got it. Yeah. Cool. So I think we got that one pretty well. Yeah.
Suggestion.
Yeah.
Rather than prefacing it by at a public meeting, perhaps in advance of the special meeting, comma, the board in parens at a special meeting. I think it would just read more easily and be more easily understood.
At a public meeting?
Yeah. Mainly that it's at a meeting and not.
It could be done at a regular meeting.
Yeah.
So, at a regular meeting, okay.
So put it after, in parens, after that.
Okay. After the board, yeah. It just...
at a public meeting. So I have, here's how I would read it then. And for, let's see, eligible for consideration of appointment and for interviews by the board of directors at a special meeting of the board. In advance of the special meeting, the board, at a public meeting, in parenthesis, shall prepare and agree upon a single set of questions.
Is that the term at a public meeting or at a regular meeting?
Well, a regular meeting would keep it within. The board may need a little flexibility in terms of timing, or you might end up having to wait a month.
Okay, fine.
Sorry, President Farmer, I seem to have taken over here. I'm sorry. So I think we're good on those two paragraphs. Let's do a motion on these two paragraphs and get these done. So,
there's still a motion on the floor to approve all of it with those changes, but now we've made some additional changes, so I withdraw my original motion.
Okay, so let's try this again then. Let's try getting these two paragraphs just so we can keep it clean. So I move that policy 4150 be adopted through paragraph 4150.3.2 and eliminating, it's kind of awkward, and eliminating paragraph 4150.3.1. Maybe there's a better way of phrasing that. Tim has a...
President Farmer, I think it's a better practice to wait until you've completed the editing of the entire thing and not piecemeal it.
Okay. Let's go with his advice. He knows better than we do, I think. So.
Although I did have the stupidest comment of the day.
Well, that's all right. We can.
We'll try and compete with it. How's that?
What we can do here. Okay, so. There's. Harry, we can't hear you.
Director Pearson wishes to make a comment.
Yeah, in the interest of time here, would it be okay, Director Howell, if you took our comments now that you know what we want to do and revise this and bring it back on the consent agenda at our next meeting or something? Going through all this, I think is we're running out of time to get the rest of the agenda done. So, would that be okay? You're on mute now, Don.
Don, you need to unmute yourself.
There we are. Sorry. Well, let me make sure I have everything that folks have said. So the changes which we've all
I think you probably have it all together there, Don.
Well, the only President Farmer, there's one area where I'm not altogether clear. So if we can just continue, let us keep the wording. Oh, what am I going to? Oh, I needed something. I can talk with Mr. Carmel afterwards on this so I think I can resolve that. But as to the choice of, if we can leave paragraph A pretty much as it stands otherwise.
I would just suggest making it more layperson friendly. Like okay. Step one, each of the directors should write down their top three choices and number them. Then this is, and actually explain the process out so that future boards who weren't part of this discussion, who don't know what rank choice, I'd just make it a little more clear than instead of just a glom of a paragraph.
Got it. Okay. So what I'll do is, based on what I've heard, if you're all and no one has, it sounds like the concept of the ranked choice voting is agreeable. So it's a matter of how do we make that understandable and in a process that can easily follow. And then let me see. Okay, I think I have all the concerns. So yeah, we'll try to get this on the consent agenda for next meeting. Well, it'll have to be not this month. It'll have to come next month.
Right.
Because I'll need to run it back by the policy committee one more time. But I don't foresee a problem on that.
Thank you and the policy committee for the work.
Well, thank you all for your kind attention.
So I'm a little bit, thank you so much, Don and the rest of the board members. You know, we actually have two people that wish to speak in public comment. So I just want to ask Mr. Carmel, since this item is now finished, should I actually take two members of the community making public comment, brief comment right now on this item, or continue to move forward? I don't think normally we would do that, but especially since it seems to have been discussed ad nauseum, so to speak, what would you suggest?
It's at your discretion, President Farmer, but you did have public comment from at least one member of the public, so I feel like you already have public comment.
Right.
But you have the discretion to allow.
Okay. I'm going to pass on public comment. I know it's going to disappoint three people, but it's time that we move on. You know, I was almost tempted, especially after we've been really kind of focused, as hard as that would seem to believe, but it seems we've been very focused on the past two items, and I was almost going to suggest maybe a five-minute break just to kind of, regain our thoughts, so to speak, because I have a feeling that the next item, at least item 4E, might take a little more time. And I'll just take a consensus, shake your head one way or the other, and we'll move on. All right. So I'm seeing...
President Farmer, yes. before we break, I just want to encourage those three people, if they want to make comment, they should attend the next policy committee meeting so their comments can be heard there.
They can do that, or maybe make a written comment to the policy, whichever. Anyway, let's take a five-minute break. We'll be back at 25 after 4. And I want to say one more thing. I really want to compliment the members of the board. I didn't do it after our discussion of the item on strategic planning. And it was a very, how can we say it, a very vibrant discussion of all the pros and cons of which direction to go on that very important issue. And I know sometimes people think, wow, the board, they're just kind of flapping their gums and nothing really gets done except taking time. I thought that we really did an excellent job there. So I just wanted to comment before I forgot. So, let's come back at 4:25. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you, Bob. Before we move on to item 4D, just briefly, for those of you that did wish to make a comment on the previous item, since Director Howell is kind of overseeing that item and bringing it back to the consent agenda, you might just want to drop him an email or give him a call. I don't think he'd mind. He knows all of you personally, so that might be a way of accommodating you. So moving on to item 4D, and Mr. Weigold, go right ahead. General Manager Weigold, excuse me.
President Farmer, agenda item 4D is discussion and consideration to adopt resolution 46-2020 regarding the local state of emergency declaration. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider adoption of resolution 46-2020, amending resolution 09-2020 to reduce the requirement to review whether a continued local state of emergency exists due to the coronavirus pandemic to once a month. And the revised or the amended resolution is attached in your agenda package.
All right. Seems like we have two members of the board that wish to comment. So, Director Pearson, go right ahead.
No comment. Just in the interest of time, I'd think we discussed this the last meeting, or maybe even on before that. But I move to approve resolution 46-2020.
I'll second that.
All right, thank you. All right, cool. So, Haley, a quick roll call, please.
Is there any public comment? And I have my hand up.
Pardon moi, Director Rice.
I just have a really quick question that Mr. Carmel maybe can answer for me. Why are we not doing a repeal and replace versus amend? Because I've been going through a lot of my historical binders so that I can, and that's binder in quote because I returned my binders, but I've been going through all my past binders and it's kind of difficult to figure out what the actual current situation is when there's all these amendments. Because if you miss a later amendment, if I was just looking at this resolution 9-2020 and didn't have knowledge there was something that amended it, versus if we were to pass a whole brand new resolution, which would be complete with what the current situation is. And I don't intend to suggest we change this one. I just wanted to know if there was a reason for that practice of doing an amending, and then you've got a whole stack of stuff that amends a resolution rather than just doing a new resolution.
Can be done either way. This was shorter and easier, so I did it this way. You can certainly table this, and I'll bring back another one next week.
It just seems like it would be cleaner to me. I mean, I understand the reason you just explained. It just seems like it would be easier for the public to understand what the current, whatever it is.
That may be true with a resolution that's going to have a long life. This is not going to have a long life. It's very temporary. Oh,
fingers crossed. It's been a long time so far, longer than we thought. So thank you. I call the question.
Director Howell, go ahead and unmute yourself and make a brief comment there.
I'm not having a problem with this as it stands, which is simply that saying that we need to only address this once a month. There is some issue about how permanent this is becoming, however. So while I will agree to continue with this, I would like to have this brought back, not too much to determine whether it's an emergency, but at some point, what we're regarding as an emergency becomes the new normal. And I'm afraid that we may be in a situation like that. So there are certain Jedi powers here, which we're giving the general manager. And while it's perhaps something that we want to do as in an emergency, at some point, this stops being an emergency and starts being the way things are. And so I really do want to have this addressed because there are some, I'm not going to take time today, but I would like to have this brought back and have the general manager describe to us those kinds of things that he has needed to do, where he's needed the special powers that we've granted him, or and also those things that he foresees in the future, which may require special powers. Because we're already 6 months into this, and we have a very good possibility of another 6 to 18 months. So I think we really need to address what exactly does the general manager, what kind of powers does the general manager need in this situation where it is no longer an emergency? This is the new way that things are going to be for a while. So enough said. I think we did have a call for the question on this, but I would like to see this again.
Well, I just want to make a comment. You say from going from an emergency to the new normal, it's going from an emergency, I think, to an ongoing crisis. Right? At least that would be my sense of it. But I appreciate what you had to say about bringing this back, Director Hall. So does anyone want to make a motion on the way it stands right now to approve this?
And we already had a motion and a second.
My apologies. Thank you. I just want to say, Director Rice, when you were talking earlier about you no longer being on the board when we did the strategic planning, I'm thinking that's a bummer. You would have been much appreciated. So, Haley, go ahead and do a roll call, please.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Let's move on to agenda item 4E and General Manager Weigel.
President Farmer, because of the time, can we maybe do 4F and then get into 4E so we can dispose of 4F really quickly? I don't think it'll be as long of a discussion. Would that be acceptable to the board to switch so we do 4F?
I see no problem there. I've made similar suggestions in the past. I'm glad you caught that. So let's go ahead and do item 4F, and considering what's happening right now and what usually happens, we probably can already decide on what we're going to do here just by what's going on in this particular meeting. So General Manager Weigel, very briefly, just sort of bring this up for us to discuss, please.
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 4F is discussion regarding holding two regular board meetings a month. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors discuss continuing to hold two regular board meetings per month and provide direction to staff. Any changes to the regular board schedule would require amending the board bylaws, which could be done at an October regular meeting.
All right. Well, as much as some of us would like to do just one meeting a month, it doesn't seem as if that's very practical at this point in time. So, can we have a motion to approve this, or is there some type of discussion we'd like to have? Director Howell, did you wish to say something? Yes, go ahead and unmute yourself, Don.
Yeah, I don't want to take a lot of time. I think as long as we are adhering to our schedule and we don't continually extend meetings, I think that as long as we can keep our work within the 6 hours a month that we've allowed, that's doing pretty well. I think the issue is where we've run short of things and meetings have gotten canceled. There's sort of some confusion. And then we've also extended many times when maybe we could have simply postponed to another day. I think that's all I need to say. As I said, there is no need for a vote on this because this is only discussion.
Oh, you're correct. My apologies. Yes, Director Pearson.
I'm all for going to back to one if we could get it all done in one session. But I think we would necessarily have to go to a four-hour session at least.
Yeah.
And we would really have to limit discussion and really get down to the business as it appears in front of us instead of going on and on, I guess, at times. But one thing that I don't like is I don't like where we adjourn to a date certain, because that takes us off schedule that we've given the community, and the community then either has to adjust their schedule to get to that meeting, or they don't come to that meeting. So I don't like when we do that. I don't know what the solution is, but I'm okay with going to one meeting if you want to go to 4 hours, maybe to kind of cram it in, or I think we have to stay with the two meetings at 3 hours apiece. Thank you.
Vice President Steidel, you wish to comment?
Thank you, President Farmer. I'm just thinking in terms of potentially the new board members coming in, and the fact that we may not be as svelte as we would like to be in our board meetings with new people coming in and getting acclimated to the processes and so forth, and questions bound to come up. So at least in the near term, I think that we probably will be dealing with two meetings a month.
Right, so that's a point well taken. Director Pearson, you wish to make one more comment? No, okay. All right. Seeing no one else with their hand raised, no attendees wishing to comment, so thank you for the discussion. Let's move back to item 4E and General Manager Weigel. Thank you. Thank you for that suggestion, Director Rice.
Yes, President Farmer, agenda item 4E is discussion and consideration of Board of Directors assignments to standing committees and issues related to interaction between the Board of Directors and standing committees and other related concerns. Staff is recommending that the Board of Directors discuss and consider the Board of Directors assignments to its standing committees and issues related to interaction between the board and the standing committees, how the standing committees' agendas are developed, and other related concerns. I also will pass this over to recommend passing this over to Vice President Steidel for further discussion, leading further discussion.
Thank you, GM Wengel. So there were a couple of things that prompted this. One was the policy committee that's being the policy the budget policy that's being looked at by the finance committee. There were some recommendations that had been made for revisions in our having gone through the policy and taken a look at it with having just gone through a budget cycle. And the question came up that I couldn't answer for the committee that said, now what do we do with it? Because this is a policy that was actually developed outside the policy committee and directed by the board of directors, but it still doesn't carry a policy number. So, I mean, the obvious thing is it needs to go to the policy committee for a policy number, but what does that mean? What does that represent? Do you say policy committee, give me a policy number, and that is part of format, that number can go ahead and be formatted into what we already have? Or is that something that literally that has to be turned over to the policy committee, and that is an action that they take, and then it comes back to the finance committee, and then it goes to the board? It just seems that we need to at least discuss what those kinds of circumstances are when there's a policy that's actually being, has historically been put together outside of the policy committee, or if for some reason the board directs that a policy be done by a committee other than the policy committee for some reason. So I had wanted to have the conversation about that, and that was just some background of why that happened. The other thing that I've kind of become sensitive to, particularly with being a part of the staff that puts together, or part of the process that puts together the agendas, is that I don't know that there is an awareness, complete awareness in the amount of infrastructure support that has to come from the staff to be able to sustain all of our committee work as well as the agendas. And there is a committee meeting agenda preparation flowchart that's on page 30 of the agenda package that talks to that and talks to some of the timeline. And I think that's something that the board may not have seen. All board members may not have seen this yet, but I think that we need to start sensitizing ourselves as board members in the way that we direct requirements to the individual committees for their work. In the case of the Finance Committee, a lot of what that direction ends up being is because there are policies in place like the budget policy or financial documentation that is part of a norm, and all of that's already been established. And the R&I Committee has in somewhat some additional structure to who they are also because of the CIP and then the interactions with the SST and so forth. And unfortunately, it falls out for the policy committee all the time because it doesn't have any of the structures that the other two committees do. And I feel that as a board, we probably have been remiss in the way that we very easily hand off things as far as the policy committee, because I think in some cases it may have overloaded them. I don't know that we've been really good about establishing the significance of things that we would like to have the policy committee look at directly. And it goes back to some cases to the sensitivity of the infrastructure supports that have to happen administratively, both with staff reports and meeting requests with staff and all of those kinds of things. So there were two things that actually I started looking at. And one was the bylaws for the board. And for the board bylaws, if you look on page 27, the agenda packet, and it's item 9.5A, and it says each standing committee should consider district related issues assigned to it by the board of directors. The other thing that's kind of interesting in that is if you go to the next page, 28 and B, I think item B has something that's a disparate combination of things that's being addressed by what this is describing. It says the committee may meet with staff and or district consultants, but shall not interfere with their duties as determined by the board. Actually, that isn't a determination of the board. Those are operational duties. Mm-hmm. That are the responsibility of the general manager, in my mind. And maybe it was because of the addition of the reference to district consultants that the board mentioned came into that. But I think that the staff interactions with the committees really needs to be as a conduit through with the general manager, and the general manager being able to determine the staff time that they have available, because he's the one who's having to manage all of the other processes they're dealing with. So a combination of that, and then in taking a look at the committee bylaws, which are on page 17, In trying to understand implementation of those board bylaws for the committee work being done by direction of the board. In the statements of purpose, the 1.1.B starts out with at the direction of the board of directors, the committee, and then it goes out and lists out the things that the committee is involved in. If you move that down to the R&I committee and to the policy committee, that same kind of designation doesn't exist. So that inference of the board of directors isn't embedded into the information for the committee bylaws the way that it's called out for the board bylaws. So as something for consideration, it would be the revision of the standing committee bylaws to include, you know, some kind of wording relative to direction of the board of directors. And it could be something as simple as, for instance, on 1.2A, the second sentence, if that sentence was just started with at the direction of the board of directors, and then it fits quite easily into that framework. And in fact, if you go down to 1.3A, it's the same thing, that second sentence, if it's prefaced with at the direction of the board of directors, so that there's a consistency in that across the board. So that was one thing for consideration, was the actual revision of the committee bylaws, which in this case, normally any revision to the bylaws would be generating out of the committee and then brought to the board, except that when we formulated the standing committees, this whole statement of purpose was something that was defined at the board level and then used consistently and stated right at the beginning to cover all three. So that was one item, was the...
If you don't mind, can we have, instead of moving on to another item, and then maybe that third item, maybe we could just have discussion on this first one. I know Director Rice has her hand up, and
okay.
We have someone.
I apologize.
Someone in the audience who wants to make a public comment. So, Director Rice.
Actually, I'd like to hear Vice President Steidel's items and from the public before I make my comments, if that's okay with you, President Farmer.
Okay. Well, then, Vice President Steidel, go right ahead and continue on, and then we'll call for public comment.
All righty. And then the second consideration was the discussion about the board bylaws, whether or not the other board members felt that the information on page 28, that 595B, is something that should be considered for revision in that as determined by the board, that actually the operational duties as determined by the general manager was the second item. And then the third item that I'd like the board to consider is maybe having a more formalized process of being able to track the items that the board is passing to the committees, because I think that it's easy to lose track of the amount of activity that's migrating to the committees and how much that is requiring of staff support, and that potentially it can create difficulties in overloading the staff. And it's very easy to lose track of what we as a board have directed towards committee work. So that would be the third item. And I guess there was one more thing, I apologize. And this goes to the the board, the committee. I believe my notes. The page 18. It's the suggested item for addition. That would be a under the statement of purpose one, that there would be a 1.4 that would be added, and that by having some kind of statement that talks to how policies that are developed outside of the policy committee are handled in terms of the number assignment and that kind of thing. That if we put something into the language there, that would leave a footprint for other people who eventually will be dealing with all of this to understand what the mechanism and the process is. And I think it would streamline it and answer that question so the issue doesn't keep coming up. So there are four items altogether.
All right. Well, thank you, Vice President Steidel. Since we have two members of the public that wish to comment, and then obviously we're coming back to the board, if we could have a motion to extend this meeting, let's go with 5:15 for starters and hope for the best. So do we have a motion to extend the meeting to 15 minutes?
I move to extend to 5:10.
All right. Do we have a second on the motion to extend the meeting 10 minutes?
I will.
Thank you. How about a quick roll call vote, Haley, and then we'll go to public comment.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Pearson?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Seidel?
Aye.
President Farmer?
Aye. Ms. Bettenhausen has had her hand up the longest, so Elizabeth, go right ahead, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would remind you that sometime back this afternoon, you decided to take up your strategic planning in January. I think the issue that Vice President Steidel has raised here, or I should say the four issues she has raised, are very complex. And I'm dumbfounded in a way at all the articulation that you have given them, Vice President Steidel. It's quite a use of the English language in its multiple forms. I would suggest to you all to table this until you have your strategic planning meeting, because the issues that are raised here are very much related to one of the four things you were proposing to do at that strategic planning, and that is consider the opportunities facing this district and community. And an opportunity here is of significance in that it is the distinction between operations and policy on the one hand, which I think is crucial for you to give more serious thought to. And then on the other hand, it's the distinction between power and authority. And I think that this comes up repeatedly in board meetings of the CCSD. And because you have not clarified those distinctions, even as a majority, you have a very great confusion about responsibility issues. And so if you would postpone this, take up the questions of operations and policy, and what is the distinction, a crucial one, take up the question of the distinction between power and authority, a very crucial one, and then the big question, what is the major focus of responsibility that you are going to build into your strategic plan? I think that would be excellent. And Vice President Steidel has given a solid beginning foundation for these kind of discussions, but to have them today would be very premature. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen. Ms. Dickerson.
Thank you, President Farmer. I have to say that Vice President Steidel's analysis of this item is rather overwhelming. She seems to have gone through everything with a fine-tooth comb, and just brings this up after we've gone through bylaw changes over the last year. I sort of say to myself, why now? I have some questions with the bylaws myself, and I'm going to bring up something here. One of them is 9B that you referred to, 9.5B that President Vice President Seidel referred to, that the committee may meet with staff and or district consultants, but shall not interfere with the duties as determined by the board. I believe that the committees, certainly at the R&I committee I attend many times, meet with staff. So is that I don't even understand if that's the issue. I can't really get my head around it. I don't really understand from your explanation, Vice President Seidel, what you really are referring to. Under 9.4, though, I am having a problem. 9.4 meetings, A, all committees shall comply with the provisions of the Ralph M. Brown Act concerning the calling of public meetings and the board and committee bylaws. I am having a real issue with the R&I and the Finance Committee meeting as in joint meetings, not publicly noticed. I do not believe that is legal under the Brown Act. It's not publicly noticed. It's not a closed session. It can't be. So I would like an explanation as to how we are having these joint meetings where the public has no way of knowing because it isn't noticed. And then if they arrive somehow, are asked to leave, or by one member and then of staff, and then another member staff says, oh, well, maybe it's okay for them to stay. That needs to be clarified, and I'd like for legal counsel to clarify that at least today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bickerson. So if I could just ask Mr. Carmel, would you wish to comment on Ms. Dickerson's question?
Well, if in fact that happened, Ms. Dickinson is right. There's no such thing as joint meetings that aren't noticed. Both committees should have had duly noticed meetings, and the public should have been able to attend and participate. I'm not aware of that. Was anyone aware of that?
Well, I see directors shaking their heads negative. So, Director Rice, you wish to make a comment? We have 10 minutes left, so let's move forward here. Director Rice, you wish to make a comment?
Yes, thank you. First off, thank you for working on this mop-up and taking a fine-tooth comb to these bylaws, because clearly that one slipped, the 9B slipped through my eyeballs, and I'm usually pretty close on top of things related to the difference between what's the GM's job and what's the board's job. Secondly, I believe the timing, if I might call you out a little bit, Vice President Steidel, is related to some board training she's been attending related from the CSDA. So she's trying to bring the district into best practices is part of why I think this is coming up now. And I appreciate she's doing that education for herself and for the entire community. Just like President Farmer and I attended the trainings several years ago, I think that this is something that needs to be done. I am heartened by the earlier discussions we've had that were actually substantial and did lead to some moving forward on different things, which is why I'm going to suggest we table a more full discussion and or have an ad hoc committee added to the agenda for the next agenda, so that this mop-up is really important. It's part of what causes confusion is when things aren't consistent. And I would be more than happy to work with Vice President Steidel on what these little things are, because I think it is really, really important. As far as the first question about whether that policy on the budget should go to the policy committee before it comes to the board, my feeling is if it's ready for board recommendation and there aren't specific to policy issues other than the numbering, I don't think it needs to go to policy. They've got enough on their plate. I think we assigned it to the Finance Committee. Therefore, it should come from the Finance Committee. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. Then the board can decide if we need to have it looked at again by policy or whatever. But I think it should come back. We assign it to the committee. Then they give it back to the board. Then that assignment's done. Perhaps one of the things that could help prevent some confusion is that the board should be making motions to refer things to committee so there's a record of it, and that would help with that issue. But I am going to suggest, due to the limitation on time, and I know that the rest of the directors have an opinion about how the committees have been going, especially because I'm not a committee chair and three of you are. I really think this deserves a more full discussion, and I'd like to see it come back in that way. Mr. Carmel, could the president appoint an ad hoc committee based on this agenda item, or would it have to come back for?
This was very broadly worded for action, so that's well within the framework of this particular agenda item.
Okay, so I would recommend that the president appoint an ad hoc committee so that we can bring this back and have a more fulsome discussion about what the issues might be other than the ones raised by Vice President Steidel.
Well, I have two folks that I would like to recommend, but before I do that, we have two members of the board that wish to speak. Don, you've had your hand up for a while. Go right ahead.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, I'm very, there's some very good material here, and I really would like to see this come back. And when it comes back, because it does sound like that's probably where we're going, I'd like to see the points broken out so that they could be dealt with separately, because they're all significant and probably need attention. The one comment I would make is having to do the question that I apparently brought this forward originally, which is, when one committee has a policy, that a non-policy committee has a policy, what happens? And we have actually had this discussion at a board meeting some time ago. I don't recall if there was a motion or not. But in any case, regardless, I think that particular procedure, and I'll tell you just a word or two about that in a minute, is probably better dealt with as a policy rather than in the bylaws. It's a little bit... because it's really more of a procedural thing, and the bylaws need to be as generic as they can be and still be clear. And also it makes it easier for the board to change. If it's a policy that the board doesn't like, it's much easier to change than if it's in a set of bylaws. So I would recommend that for that particular issue. Suffice it to say, however, that what we're operating under, based upon my understandings, is that if another committee has a policy, that policy has two possible routes. That the committee, let's say, for example, the Finance Committee, the budget policy, that budget policy could go to the board. And it's kind of, in my opinion, it's up to the Finance Committee how they want their policy to be dealt with. I could envision a case where the Finance Committee might say, gosh, this looks interesting, but we'd like the policy committee just to look at it to see if we've covered all the bases or something, where, in other words, asking for a policy committee input. On the other hand, it's possible, you know, so that's one route where it goes from the committee to some committee to the policy committee and thence to the board, which is perfectly acceptable. But I think probably the more likely route is that it goes from the committee, say the finance committee, to the board. If the board likes the finance committee's policy, the board then sends it to the policy committee for formatting and numbering. And that's what that was my understanding, is that was the understanding under which I've been operating. And apropos of that, it was the case that by motion, the board did ask that the ultimate, I think it was a motion, the ultimate output from the policy committee after its 10 years of working or something should be a policy manual with all of the district's policies, all nicely organized and numbered so that everything can be located easily. And that we should be using the CSDA format and the CSDA organization. That's what we've been asked to do. So that's all I needed to say. I really think this is a very important topic, and I would like to see it come back, but I would like to see it as four separate items. It would make it a little easier because I think they are, it just might help us to focus a little more on it. So that would be I would be very happy to see this again. And thank you, Director Steidel, for your looking at all these. These things are always coming up to bite us every once in a while.
All right. So we have two folks that have their hands up, and then we need to appoint an ad hoc committee before we adjourn, and we've got about 3 minutes left. So, Director Pearson, just to make a quick comment.
Yes, I would just like to address Ms. Dickinson's comment, and I think what she's referring to is the ad hoc on funding from R&I and the ad hoc on funding from finance meeting at the same time. And maybe Mr. Carmel could address that as to whether that needs to be,
noticed.
All that. Yes.
I'd be glad to. No, two ad hoc committees can meet without having to comply with the notice requirements of the Brown Act.
Okay. Yeah. We subsequently talked about letting people come in if they wanted to, and we are going to allow that if they want to do that in the future. But most of those meetings that we've had have been out at the wastewater treatment plant wandering around, so it's a little hard for the public to attend. They're not all Zoom meetings. I'm done. I'm sorry. I took up too much time.
Nothing to be sorry about. Vice President Seidel, we have about a minute left. So I think what we need to do, unless somebody wants to make a motion to extend the meeting another five minutes.
I will take my hand down. How's that?
Thank you. All right. So with regard to appointing a committee to an ad hoc committee for this, I know Director Rice seemed to express an interest in putting her brain power into this. So I would imagine the other option would be either Vice President Steidel, who brought this up in the first place, or Director Howell, who is obviously in charge of policy. So it seems like you should be involved, Vice President Steidel. How about you and Director Rice being on the ad hoc committee?
That would be fine.
Are you comfortable with that?
Yes.
Okay. Director Rice, are you fine with that?
Yes. Do we need to make a motion about that?
No, the president has the power to appoint.
Thank you.
Okay. So we have about 30 seconds left. So overall, I think this is a very productive meeting. The fact that the majority of attendees that got here 3 hours and 10 minutes ago are still here, hopefully that says something. We kept their attention. And everybody out there that's observing this meeting, everyone that's here on the board and everyone else staff-wise, everybody be well, stay safe, wear a mask, count our blessings that we live here, and say a prayer for folks that are going through some really challenging, life-changing experiences. So everybody be well. Thank you. Bye-bye.